And as they're finishing up, you can turn with me to Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6. I shared that early one morning, Phyllis and I, just in our early morning time together and reading and getting coffee and whatever, we began to talk about something came up, and I had this picture of a mother preparing her children for the day, and all they were going to do is go out and play. You know, that's the great order of the day during summer for children, right? What do we get to do? We get to play. You know, of course, going out to play is grabbing an iPad or an iPhone, and you know, we've lost some of that, but back in the day, you know, having a day, it was like the adventure was on and let's get our stuff on. And I spent countless hours running the woods and the fields. We lived just outside of Robertsville, and I knew every square inch of the township, I think, because everything was fair game. Every woods and every strip mine back before they filled them in, they were great places to climb on and do all the things we probably shouldn't have done. And I just loved being out, and there were a few of us that were always running around together. And so the order of the day, when it was, even remotely nice out, even when it was not, was to go out on an adventure. My mom was sick a lot when I was little, so we were left to raise ourselves, and I don't really have a problem with that. It was good with it. We didn't get in trouble for the most part, very little of that. We just played and played tag in barns, and it wasn't hide and seek and stuff like on the ground. It was up on the beams and barn rafters and running across things and whatever, and life was good. It was very dangerous, but who cared then? It didn't matter. And so, being prepared, I had this picture of a mother preparing her children for the day, and she sets out armor instead of play clothes. And of course, our kids, they dress up all the time, so they'd think, that's cool, Batman, Ninja Turtle outfit, whatever, that's good. Give me a sword, a lightsaber, or this or that. So they like the play toys. But if it was real armor, they'd get serious, whoa, that's a vest, a real helmet, not the play one that, the other day I visited, I stopped in at Maria's and out came Josiah with his Darth Vader. It's a mask that animates your voice once it beeps. He instructed me that if it beeps, then you can talk. And then you take it off and you're done. So. But if she starts handing them real armor and real, real breastplates and real shields and real things, they'd be like, man, what's the deal? I'm just going out to the sandbox. Sometimes as believers, we receive this passage the same way, what's the big deal? And the instruction, the exhortation in Ephesians 6, we'll begin to read in verse 10 again. I'll review a little bit. Finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. And I explained, this was an apostle, a father of the faith, writing letters to his beloved children in the faith. That's a big deal. It's a big deal. We've lost that in religion, but a real apostle, apostolic person who has birthed churches and seen people come to Jesus and get free from a life of sin, you get very connected to those people. Any of you that have been in the ministry any length of time, when you're invested in a person and in their conversion and their transformation and they're getting free from sin and getting free from things, you find yourself very attached to them. Yes? It's only natural. I don't think that should go away. I think that's very natural. And you spend hours on the phone and you've prayed for them and you're nurturing them and you're helping them through their things and you're seeing the changes in their lives, you get very connected. And to see them lose the ground they gain is heartbreaking. It tears you up. To see another influence come in and start to destroy what they've started walking in. I've had to go through this a lot of times in my life, and so have you in your walk with the Lord. And so it's a big deal. Because you pour in and it's so exciting to see someone come to Jesus, someone start walking in the light, walking in the truth, and being transformed. And then to see an element come in that destroys that, takes away from that, puts the fire out, leads them astray. You can get like upset. Just putting it mildly. The reports that the apostles would get when someone would come in and teach a false teaching that would mess up a whole church, which at the time a church was a city. There'd be a lot of feelings in that. Just naturally, just speaking naturally. Let's get normal again and look at the Bible in normal through normal eyes, real life situations. They were real men and women who had real investments in people and things, and they lay down their life and they shed their blood and they do things for the church and for their people and for these churches. And so he's writing this letter. Just don't miss the point. This is passionate. This is with very heartfelt when he says, "Be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might." Why does a parent give instruction to their children, even if they're adult children? Because you want to see them make it. Our children sometimes don't like us fussing over them or worrying, but we're also like, don't make a mistake at this juncture in your life. It's hard to get out of those messes. So we're like, be careful. Be careful who you marry. That's great instruction, isn't it? Be careful who you get involved with. Be careful who your friends are. Be careful what job you take. Be careful what decisions you make in your life. Because I care a lot, and I'm connected to you, and you're going to mess my life up as well as your own, you know? Like, this is going to cost all of us. So it's heartfelt, and he says, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. That wasn't like, you know, hey, but it wasn't religious. There wasn't an organ playing. It was a letter, a passionate letter of instruction. Be strong in the Lord. And to have somebody go, whatever, you know. Be like, no, I'm serious. Be serious about this. You must be strong in the Lord in the power of his might. Because if you don't, it will eat your lunch. Life is coming. Struggles are coming. There are enemies. There are strategies laid in place to take you out. To destroy this faith, to put out your fire, to cause you to be lukewarm, to take your life. All too well, we know this. So there needs to be a real seriousness about receiving this exhortation, and we're getting answers and direction. If you do this, like, this is for your own good, and if you do this, you'll do well. You'll overcome. You'll beat it. You'll make it. And so then he says, put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the wiles of the devil, the strategies. Verse 12, for we do not wrestle against, here's first key. Don't miss this point. We don't wrestle against flesh and blood. How many times a week should you hear this before you really get a grip on it? Daily, at least. Me too. Most basic principle and most hardest thing to forget and lose my sight on. I swear to God, I'm fighting people. My wife just said no to the new boat I want to buy. I don't buy boats, but just, you know. She did say that to my Kubota tractor that I wanted to buy, so the Lord just gave it to me. Bypassed her. Went right around her. She couldn't say a thing. We do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against principalities. First of all, principalities is the breakdown of these words. I spent more time on it. I just want to review this week. Means intimidation. You're fighting against intimidation. It may show up in a person, but it's intimidation you're fighting. It's a spirit. It can be in a community, it can be in an area, it can be in an organization, it can be in the relatives, it can be in the church. It can be in a marriage, it can be in a household. I don't want, even as a leader, even as a husband, even as a father, I don't want to function in intimidation. I don't want to function in that. That's bad juju. I want to function in love, power, peace, mercy, grace. I want to function in kingdom principles and be strong in those, and I don't want to tap into this stuff. You can, but it's dirty. It's a dirty bomb. It's dirty power. Can we just say that? This is really our issue with government and politicians, because what has become normal is they function in dirty stuff, dirty motives. That's the problem, because good, wholesome government leaders are very essential. They're very important. We've learned to despise most of them because we don't trust. But the element of having governing leaders and authority is a beautiful thing. That's peace, man. That's supposed to be good. It was a kingdom from kingdom. Kingdom government is good. So the same with us and you and I as individuals. We don't wrestle against people. We wrestle against these principalities. And you definitely don't want it in you. It's a territorial attitude. The second one is powers, the word powers that he speaks of. And it means the fear to speak, the fear to speak up, the fear to tell the truth, the fear to tell how you feel about something. That's a principality. It silences good people. It silences people with conviction. It silences you if you know that what you believe about this isn't popular, and so you stop, you're afraid to speak. I don't want to trigger anybody. I don't think you should do that on purpose. I do think we need to learn to speak clearly with real integrity and compassion. That's different. Not in an argumentative way, but we must take a step towards speaking the truth, giving a voice to what is the truth, what is good. There's a principality that will restrict you from speaking, and you think it's flesh and blood, but it's not. It's a principality. The rulers of darkness, which reduces down to this, manipulation. Don't want manipulation in my house. Don't want manipulation in my church. I don't want manipulation in anything I do, and I don't want to be under manipulation, anything that I'm getting from anybody else. It's bad. Don't manipulate your children. Moms, I know it's tempting. I was with some mother, and who knows? And I heard them start doing the deals with their child, and I just kind of shook and laughed. It was just a funny thing. I said, how can you? I just commented, how can you help yourself? Sometimes you just have to pull out the card, you know. But that's a joke, like. It's not good. That's not how you want to control or lead your children, is it? You want that eradicated. And just pay attention. It's a spirit. And when you manipulate them, guess what's going to come back on you? From them. From whoever's under you and whoever you're relating to. If you function in manipulation, how much more? It's going to come back to you. We want to eradicate manipulation. And we actually need wisdom to do that because it's so infiltrated in our culture and in everything that we do. And if you do it with a shine, if you do it in the right way, it doesn't look like this. It looks like that, but it's actually this. So, yeah. It's not about whether you use it or not. It's about how good are you at using it. Can you use it and keep it hidden? Not show it for what it is. So we want that eradicated. And we're up against that often. And when you're manipulated, when you feel manipulated, you are angry. Any of you have any low burn anger going on? It's amazing. In your relationships, you start feeling manipulated in something, your anger level and frustration level will just start going. It's amazing what you'll do, what sacrifices you'll make if you can do it out of freedom. I'm very motivated to do things out of freedom and out of caring and out of serving. I'm very reluctant if I feel manipulation in it, like that just shuts me down. if you catch yourself saying the word should, you're in this thing. If you hear yourself say the words should, you'll say it to people around you. I should go. You should, why? So no one thinks bad of you? Like, what? Why should you? Why should you? A person that's living out of true conviction looks different, acts different, and usually are not angry, and walking around with this frustration. Anger will give you heart attacks, folks. Like, be careful with that. Unforgiveness, all that. It's toxic. And then spiritual wickedness in high places, it reduces down to malice, doing things with the intent to hurt. And through a lot of the teachings from Danny Silk and Bethel, we've learned how much it's in our thinking that we should punish people. That punish, and we think God punishes us. Now, there's a discipline that is wholesome, that even the Lord will discipline us because we're sons and daughters. But punishment is like serving a sentence. And I'm not going to get into our judicial system, though. I don't think it's working very good, like our, right? No. It doesn't work. We kind of take people out of the game for a while, put them in a box with you know, bars, and then let them there in a bad environment most of the time, and then release them because their time's up and expect them to be different. Insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. Matter of fact, now we've put them with their peers and they, you know, they get worse. Isn't that, that's one of the things of ISIS. They recruit in the prisons. So we have a lot of, and it all comes out of this way of dealing things where we think punishment fixes stuff. And discipline, I just would like to categorically say that's different. But this intent, this malice, this do things, it's like this getting back. It's all has the same heart network. So we want to eradicate that. That's what you fight. Someone is directing malice at you, you need to identify what it is and that it's a spirit. There's a spirit behind this to where we're all aware of the horrendous things going on in the world now, like at a whole different level. The intent to do harm just because. And the more harm, the more glory. That's this spirit of malice, just to kill, just to hurt, just to damage. Like, it's hard to get our heads around, why would you do something so heinous without at least let it be a crime of passion or something. Like, oh yeah, I get it, you know. Of course she shot her husband. He had an affair on her and he did this and that. You know, it's like, I get it. It wasn't right, but I get it, you know. But now we have these things that we have to watch at a large scale, openly. We see all this stuff, and it's this spirit of malice to do harm. I don't want to participate in that at any level. I don't want to be under that influence. So Paul is saying to his church, his people, his beloved sons and daughters, be careful of this. This is what you fight against, and you cannot fight against that in the flesh. And the flesh is, we get back, we get them before they get us. Like, it's the way you deal with this stuff. If it's in the flesh, then it's not going to work. You're just one of them. If they hate you and you hate them back, you lose. If they take out your eye and you take out their too, they got you. You're just one of them. You're what you hate. So kingdom comes and teaches us a whole different line of principles and approaches. And we're like, some of this stuff's hard. Jesus says, forgive. Like, are you kidding me? And you'll find if all of us get into our secret, you know, personal lives deep enough, we know the Christian thing to say, right? Yeah, we got that down. Should you forgive? I could get all of you to go, should you forgive? You'll all be like, yes, pastor, we should. So leave us alone and get off the subject. But then if I got to your kitchen table, we just had a, let's talk and have coffee and let's just, you know, no one else around. Then we might get into some other stuff, huh? If you feel safe with me, then out it comes. I don't care what anybody says. I can't stand them. They need to, you know. So this is the stuff, it says, identifies what's bad, and then don't be that, and don't fight that in your flesh. If you do, you lose. If you do, you lose. So let's go on now with looking at the armor. This very clear instruction. Paul was having such a revelation about this that he begins to actually name parts of the armor, right? Like in detail. Because he has something, he's using it as an illustration. He graphically sees this. He sees body armor. And he begins to associate body armor with what he wants his nice little sheep, Christian sheep, to put on. His lambs, his precious ones, his sons, his daughters in the faith. I want you to put on armor. Like, yeah, but I didn't think we were supposed to fight. Yeah, but you're in the fight. You're in the fight. You need to protect yourself, and we're even going to give you some weapons. Even going to give you some weapons. You're even going to get a sword. What? Yeah, it's the sword of the word, but it's a sword. Here's the real sword. So it begins, and I want to just try to stay very natural in this so we can get it and understand a little better. That would be my goal in this. So we're in verse 13. Therefore, take up the whole armor of God. And I see an emphasis there. It's not underlined in my Bible, but I'm going to underline it. Whole. Not whole, H-O-L-E, but whole, W-H-O-L-E, and means what? Okay. Whole thing, all of it. Don't just pick up a couple pieces because you like how the helmet looks. We're so vain. We'd be like, I'm not wearing that. That looks stupid. That's how I was when I was a kid. I was probably about impossible, almost right next to Katie Harstein Koppelman trying to race. And I was so vain when I was little, like I didn't like to put on, you know, my feet were always freezing, and there was a solution to that, and I'm going way back. Can y'all track with me? There were gum boots, which I thought were cool, just because I did. You know, gum boots, we're just talking rubber boots with a little bit of lining, but not for insulation, just to protect your feet from the, yeah. I wore those all year long. With my swimming suit on, I wore gumboots. I'm telling you, my mother was sick and we were left alone a lot. And I raised my brother and yeah. Oh, that answers that. And we went swimming at the local swimming place in Robertsville, rode our bikes there. You would have seen me in my, I still remember the red swimming suit that I wore all day long and all night long and all day long and all night long. I just had them. They got washed every day because we went swimming. And I would, for shoes, I had gum boots. You never saw me in any tennis shoes. You wouldn't see me in any sandals. It was those gum boots. That's what we wore. Who was watching us? No one. And in the winter, when it's cold, I'm still wanting to wear those stupid gumboots. Guess what is the coldest thing to have on your feet in the winter? There is nothing colder than rubber with no insulation on your feet. Now, if you put on a pair of shoes, and remember the buckle boots? Any of you, can you go back? Remember the buckles, the latches? Click, 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 click. They're stupid looking. I refuse to wear them. So I say all that to say, put on the whole armor, even if you think some of it looks stupid. Yeah. Oh, that's not cool. Well, you better get it on. Because this is serious. You better get protected. You're going to ride that bike. You're going to put the helmet on, right? That's what you would say. You're going to get go on your, I know, I got motorcycle riders around here. They're like, no, I know helmet. Okay, whatever. Why is that? Because you don't think it's cool. Right? All this vanity thing. We're so vain, you know? Who sang the old song? You're so vain. We are. It's all about looks. So he begins, put on the whole armor so that you can stand in the evil day, having done all to stand. Stand therefore firm, steadfast. You've got to make a stand. And you're not going to be able to stand if you're not dressed right. If you don't have this on, you're going to not make it through the evil day. You're not going to make it through the difficult time. And we're in it. So it's there. The worst days, the worst evil days are the days that don't look evil. That's when we're really in trouble. But to stand in that day with the onslaught of what's coming at you, you better put on the whole armor. And you cannot blame anybody for your failure in the faith if you haven't put on the armor. And you must put on the armor, and you should put on the armor. And if you don't put on the armor, you should put on the armor. Get serious about this. I go to the chiropractor pretty often now, dealing with issues, you know, tight muscles, et cetera, et cetera. And this week, she asked me the question. I knew she was going to ask me, are you doing your stretches? No. And I'm not the only one that should be doing those stretches, because all of you that have knee problems, et cetera, it's coming from tendons and muscles that are like this, pulling, pulling, pulling. Why are we so uptight? I don't know. We shouldn't be, but we are. And just a muscle that's always like this can start doing damage. Why is that going on? So put on the armor. Stand therefore, verse 14, having girded your waist with truth. I'm going to get you to nod your head yes. Is truth important? Yes, Pastor. The scripture tells us not to call any man a liar, right? Like, that's not bad. Don't do that. However, there are people that are true liars. Like, they lie and they believe. And in order to be a liar at that level, you have to believe what you say. And what you say becomes the truth, whether it's connected to anything or not. I know just a few people like that. You go, how do they do that? I'm like, here's how. Because they believe what they say. The moment they say it, they create a new truth. I remember telling stories when I was this high. That red water in the strip mines we played with, that was rocket fuel. I made that up. I told my cousin, that's rocket fuel. Just, you know. Because I was trying to impress somebody, and, you know, it was strange-looking water. I mean, it should not have even been there. What, you know. Anyways, we'll stay off of that. I'm glad they reclaim the land now, and there aren't a bunch of strip mines with this red water in them, because often that was it. What did make? I don't even want to know. We even swam in some of that. Anyways. What is the truth? Do you know the truth? Just because you think something's the truth doesn't mean it's the truth. And here's what we hear know about Jesus. He is the way, the truth, and the life. If you're doing life without looking through the Jesus filter, you swear to God something's red. But if you don't, you know, put on the glasses, man. Look through Jesus, and you'll go, oh, that's not red, that's blue. That's not big, that's small. That's not real, that's an illusion. I just challenge you right now, all the things you're just so sure are the truth. Is it? See, back to this, you don't wrestle with flesh and blood, you wrestle with. Guess what happens with people when you believe things that aren't the truth? It's not pretty. And you're convinced. I know what they meant when they said this or did that. Man, that gets the church all twisted up, doesn't it? That gets the community all twisted up. That gets marriages all twisted up. When you're convinced of something, when you decide what intentions are, how do you know that? I just know. Oh, because you've got supernatural perception. And then we're believers and we're spirit-filled believers and we believe in discernment, and then we use that as an excuse to discern things, and we're not identifying when we're in the spirit and when we're in the flesh, and we're boasting that we discern something in somebody. Be careful. Be careful. Let every fact be established, and please let that person explain themselves. I dare you. Just give them a chance. If you have a problem, let's go talk about it. What did you mean when you said that? You said such and such, or I heard you say such and such, but what did you mean? I do all the time. I have people go, Pastor, you hurt my feelings when you were speaking last Sunday. I'm like, okay, what did I say this week? I got to where I wasn't surprised anymore. I'm like, probably, okay, but it wasn't intentional. What was it, you know? You said da da da, and it made me. I'm like, whoa, no. I would not do that. I get it. I hear how. I see how you were looking at it, but that was not what I was meaning. I was over here on planet X talking about that. You know, from my perspective, it was a whole different thing, and I was not talking about. I did not have you in mind. Please accept my explanation. Because this is the truth. I'm telling you how I felt. I'm telling you what I meant or didn't mean. And I need people to hear that. So part of the armor is gird yourself with truth. I challenge every one of you. Gird yourself with truth. And identify what truth is. And understand that in our culture, man, we're bad. We listen to things. We don't verify stuff. If someone convinces us, if they're handsome, if they're good looking, if they're suave, if they're good at how they present themselves, we go, oh, I believe that. Why? Well, I don't know. I just do. Things have to be verified. Be careful. Be careful buying into stuff just because someone's convincing. Back to my thing, and I don't want you to get people's faces in this frame, but I know it's hard, but you must understand, just because someone is convincing when they tell you something doesn't mean it's the truth. And the worst is, sometimes it's not that they're lying like we would tell a lie on purpose, but they really believe that. But that doesn't make it the truth, right? And we all can be guilty of that. So part of the armor, Paul's looking at his people, his beloved sons and daughters, and he says, I want you to be strong. I want you to make it. I want you to function in the power of his might. And one of the elements that will save your neck is that you've got to walk in truth. Gird yourself with truth. Function in truth. And you actually have to make a choice to radically walk in this, so that in every area of your life, every little thing where you bend the beams a little bit, bend the sunlight a little bit, so that, you know, it's amazing how cool it is to just stand in the truth of something. And I know the less they explain something they did or said, the more trustworthy it feels. And the more they explain and the more excuses they make and the more they talk about it, I'm like, why are you working so hard at telling me this story? Yeah? Because the truth is simple. And if you're just in a bad place, it's so easy to go, I'm not doing well today. My heart's upside down and my feelings are not in a good place and it's not right. Cool. That's easy. Well, yeah, let me pray for you. Like, it's simple. But if you come to me and you justify this anger or you justify this attitude or you justify this action, I'm like, can't you feel that? And so the instruction is be in the truth. Just speak the truth. You'll be in a lot less trouble. Usually when we're not telling the truth, there's a good reason. When we were young, it was like, I don't want to get that licking, spanking, grounding. You know, I don't want the consequences, so I'm gonna try this. Isn't it comical, the stories our children tell us? It's funny when they're 2 and 3 years old. Stops being funny when they get a little older. You're like, this is a problem. And so the same in all of our walk, you know, and everything about you. What an awesome thing when a person has the integrity to just speak the truth. Oh boy, I love coffee. Do you love coffee? Do you like this coffee? It's much better to go, no, I don't like that coffee. But out of the fear of rejecting someone, I don't want to make them feel bad. It's like, you don't have to, my sister-in-law, Karen, I can talk about her because she's not here today. I hate it when she tastes my food. She goes, oh, let me taste that. I know what's coming. And you all know that look, she makes me feel bad for eating what I like. Because she takes a taste and goes, she has this way of, turning her face halfway upside down. And I'm like, when she starts, I'm like, no, don't taste this. Because I know what you're going to do. You're going to ruin the experience for me because you're going to be like, woo. But she's truthful. It starts with little things, funny things like that. Pretty soon, you're putting on this whole facade, and Paul's saying, don't live in that. Don't try to be somebody you're not. Don't say you believe in something when you don't believe in something. We caught up in that here in the church, atmosphere of church. That we don't want conformity. There are values. We're all trying to get to the values, to the core values, and to walk in integrity in the values. But it's not about conforming to that. It needs to be genuine, or it's not real. I don't need you to all act. We don't want that in one another, do we? I don't want you to act a certain way. I want you to be real, be truthful. And if you're not here, then don't say you're here. It's okay. I can't forgive them. I'm not there yet. Cool. Okay. Well, we know what to work on. It's okay. I'm struggling with something. This needs to be the safest place on the planet. I'm not doing good with a certain temptation. What great joy that we can honestly, and we're not condoning it, but that you can go, I do know this is wrong, but I'm still really prone to go here. Okay, we can work with that. Don't pretend like there's not a problem when there is one. And if we can accept one another with the truth and go, oh, wow, that's tough, But there's truth. Gird your loins with truth. I challenge you today to walk in the truth of what you believe, truth, how you present yourself. Go after this. Take it to another level. Because we all can. No one here. Without knowing anything, I know it all. I know this. No one's there. 100%, you're just not there. Because this is challenging. It's tough. So let's all take that to just walk in the truth. Just the truth. The simple truth. The truth will do what to you? Want to be free? Put on truth. Gird your loins with it. Having put on the breastplate of righteousness, and this is the... this is the covering, Mike. This is what guards your heart. And interesting that it's the association. Again, Paul's looking at armor. He's visualizing armor, and whatever they visualize as a breastplate, it covers this, your torso. And he's like, that's righteousness. Put on righteousness. And how do you put on righteousness? This is not a Christian game. Need to wear, put on. You've okay? The breastplate is separate from you. It's in the closet. It's on the rack. It's where you keep your armor. Where do you keep your armor? I don't know. But it's where you keep your running shoes. It's where you keep your stuff. Where do you keep your knee pads? Where do you keep your, you know, hunting paraphernalia? It's over here in the closet. It's over here in this room. And what do you do? If you're going to go hunting, or if you're going to go sport whatever, you know, activity, you go to that place and you physically put it on. Why? Because you're going for a long walk. Why? Because you're going to go do this adventure. You're going to go to this particular job, and you don't want to leave without your safety glasses and your earplugs and your knee pads and your whatever. So you put them on purpose. Put on righteousness. And what is that? That is not, it's not your own. This is something aside from you. It's a perfect picture. That's why Paul was using it. The righteousness of Jesus is aside from you, and you put that on. I've related several times when, you know, Josiah would come in, and I'd be thinking, Brady, must, you know, Maria, like, at what point is this like over the top that your child comes to church and worships with a Spider-Man outfit on, or, you know, his latest thing? And I'm watching that like, oh, you know, is this over the top? Is like, you know. But I see this visually. All of a sudden, I told you, the Lord speaks to me, and I went, this is putting on Christ. Like, that's what it looks like. You want in the character, you put on the outfit. And putting on righteousness is that. You want to be righteous? Put it on. It's not in you. It's on you. We got to get that right. Sometimes the falling, anybody fall once in a while? Okay. So I'm with the right group. If you can calm yourself down for a moment, realize it has value to fall, because it helps keep your perspective. This is not about you being good. This is about you realizing your righteousness is where? It's in Him. It's in connection with Him. It's in, this is grace. Grace is making the connection. We want that flow, just like you plug your sweeper into the wall. You want connection. Does your vacuum at home run if you don't plug it in? No. So we need to plug into grace, and we need to stay plugged into it. It's provided. You can't get anymore, but you do have to stay connected to it. And the transitions and transformations and the righteousness that we all want to walk in, free from sin, free from hindrances, free from addictions, free from everything that binds us, it happens in the connection. The grace to change is in the connection, because we're putting on the righteousness, the breastplate. It protects all the vital organs, everything vital. It protects the heart issues. It protects your torso. What's the one of the worst wounds that a military man can get is a stomach wound, right? It doesn't kill them fast, but you always see in the movies anyways, and I know this is true, the excruciating pain from the internal bleeding, and they die slowly. You get shot in the heart, you're out pretty quick. But if you get a stomach wound, you don't die fast. You die painfully and slowly. So put on the righteousness. Put on His righteousness. And if you fall, go, I'm going to meditate more today on His righteousness and His provision. Don't forget His benefits. And make this more about Him and less about you. Sing the little song from Sunday school. I am weak, but He is strong. It's good theology. It's good theology. I'm weak, but He's strong. I'm putting Him on. I'm not going to stay in this weakness. I'm not going to make excuses for it. I'm just going to get more into Him. I'm going to stay more connected. Let this be a goal for all of us. Stay connected to the Spirit of Jesus. You can do this, pray without ceasing. It's about just staying connected. Whether you work, whether you play, whether you're stressed, whether you're in something you like or don't like, you can give thanks for all things, and gratefulness and thankfulness keeps you connected. And and talking to him and connecting with him. Through a trial, stay connected. Through a painful decision, stay connected. He cares. Like, Jesus, I don't know what to do with this. That's so hard. And just talk to him about it. And make him part of the difficulty. Let him be in that place, and you'll find, I always find answers when I truly just, in my moments, it doesn't matter what you're physically doing, just in that committing things to the Lord, he comes with answers. He comes with answers. He gives provision. Waist with truth, gird your loins with truth, and put on this breastplate of righteousness, and having shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel of peace. I always stumbled, like, that doesn't make any sense to me at all. Shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel. Like, really, how do you write an essay on that? First line, I don't know what the heck this actually is now that you ask me. I know the words from Sunday school, shod your feet with the preparation of the gospel, da, da, da. Draw a man and put some armor on him and, you know, name the shoes that are on his feet, the preparation of the gospel. But what is that? And I was wanting to get revelation, just like a good, just how to talk to you all about this so that we can grow in this and make a real practical application of putting on the armor of God. And as I was meditating, I was actually sitting there where Kathy's sitting one time, just up here with the Lord. And I realized this is about, what is the preparation of the gospel? The gospel is the good news, and it's about the good news that you have. It's the story. It's prepare the story that you have. You all have a story. How did you get here? Do you have faith? Do you believe in Jesus? How did you get there? Because not everybody's gotten there. Do you have a story of how he has saved you, how he's led you through your life? Prepare the story. So when it's time for the story, you usually don't have much of a warning. It's just time for your story. And you actually all have a story. If you would prepare your story, summarize it, reduce it down. Hit the high points, but prepare your story and realize you have one. If you know him, you have a story, because many people do not. If he delivered you, if he helped you, if he healed you, if you were once dirty and now you know you're clean, you have a story. Tell your story. The story is powerful. It's Bill Johnson talks about the power of a testimony, and we need to always be telling the testimony, because the testimony stirs up faith. And it doesn't matter whether you're at Home Depot, Walmart, at the relatives, whatever. Tell your story in this sincere, if it's really, is it really your story? Don't tell something that's not your story. This just relieves the whole witnessing thing. All you have to do is tell what happened to you. Did you see it happen? Nope. Then I don't want to talk to you. You have nothing to say. Do you have a story with Jesus? Do you have a story of him coming into your life? Do you have a story of him leading you? What's your story? What matters? Tell that. I bet it's better than you think it is. You don't need to tell somebody else's story. Tell yours. Tell the moments when you encountered the Spirit and you knew that you knew that you knew that Jesus was real. Like, all my life, I've always felt called to this place. I've never felt like I'm great at it, but I always knew I was called to this place. Whatever else I do is all around, I know I'm called. And I knew that very young. And I would talk to God before anybody told me how to do that right. I just talked to him. Whew. I escaped the religiosity. No one told me I couldn't, you know. I remember the demonstrations, the things that was happening. I'm little. I'm carrying groceries into the house, the back door of our farmhouse that was in Robertsville. And every time I would walk up, I'm little, carrying groceries. And every time I walked up to the back screen door, it blew open. Huh. And I'm like talking to God. I remember this very awareness of this calling that I had. It was all connected. Went out, got more, brought him in. And I'm thinking, if this happens again, like, and pff, it blew open. Only it had to blow out. It wasn't in. It had to blow out. It's happened 3 times in a row. I'm like singing the little song, "Hey, I'm a believer." You know, I don't know. It impacted my faith. It's my story. You can't tell me it's not my story. It's my story. Every time I would talk and ask questions, I would get answers. That's my story. That's how I got here. I'm not intellectual about my faith. I'm not intellectual about theological things, but I know what I know. I know what conviction is. I know I didn't think there was anything wrong with me till my Sunday school teacher put her hand on my head, and I felt this affection from her. I'm little. I don't know. I don't have the whatever to understand the gospel, but she weeps over 3 of us boys sitting in a little Sunday school class. We're talking about the 2 or 3 gathered, huh? And her tears about us knowing Jesus, and I'm sitting there going, what the heck is going on? And at another point, the same woman, just full of sincerity, she just was so, just a normal mother. She probably impacted my young heart more than any evangelist, any pastor, anybody, any time. And I remember another time, she just touched the top of my head, and I felt this true, sincere affection. She cared about me. She just cared. It was a touch. I remember, how funny. But it was part of my story. And so she sincerely wanted to see it. And I hear this call, and all of a sudden I know I'm supposed to go up front and give my heart to Jesus. I have this huge experience of sin leaving, and I hadn't even killed anybody yet. Like, whatever, you know? Wow, that's my story. I know that I know. And at every point that I commit things to the Lord, He leads me. It's an odd journey. But it's live action. It's real. I know what I know. I know I believe. I know when I cry out. I know all the times I've experienced His Spirit. That is the preparation of the gospel of peace. It's my story. Get your feet on. Get your shoes on. Get your feet on. Get your shoes on. I don't know if you're going to have to put your feet on, but, you know. Get your shoes on. Do you not feel different when you actually get up in the morning and get dressed? Like, I'll be like, dreading to do something until I actually get my shoes on. Then I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm good. Isn't that funny? It's a funny thing. Like, it helps the care. It helps just put you in the place. Now you're ready. Now you're ready. And that's what this, the preparation of your story. Put on your story. What's your story? Have you thought about your story? And even the bad parts, they're all valuable. Even the parts where you fell on your face but you're still here, that's all valuable because people can relate to your story. If you're a know-it-all, you're probably not going to impress anybody. If you have a sincere story, Jesus loves me, this I know. He's called me, he's revealed himself. I read my Bible, I get stuff. Really? Yeah. I ask for help and it comes alive. I get it. That's something. Can you put on your story, preparation of your story, how He's led you? It doesn't need to be somebody else's. It needs to be yours. It needs to be yours. It needs to be your story. Prepare to tell your story. To prepare to tell and make Him the hero in the story. He actually is. Sometimes we missed that point. And I'm wonderful. That's it. You're loved. But this isn't about you. It's about Him. And if every person was faithful to tell their story, someone's in something, you go, well, I don't know what you're supposed to do, but I know what I do when I'm there, when I'm in your shoes. Tell your story, deliver the mail, and then, you know, move on to the next mailbox. That will have more power and impact on people than anything else you can do. You want to impress your children? Tell them the real story. You can, at the right time, tell them the struggles. Tell them why you believe what you believe. If you don't know, then you need to prepare. You should get it together. You need to find out. Don't be trying to tell them things you don't believe yourself. Bad. They can smell that a mile away. There's a couple people in life you cannot fool ever, and your kids are one of them. You start your stuff, and they're like, whatever. I saw you yesterday. I know what you're made of, you know, that kind of thing. But if you're truthful about it and sincere about every element of your, and you start walking in truth and don't try to impress anybody, they'll find you very believable. Like, oh yeah, you weren't doing well yesterday, Mom, but you said you were sorry and you acknowledged that. You didn't tell me that was normal, and you didn't tell me that was my fault. That's big. You said you weren't doing well, and it would have been good if you were doing better. And that you're sorry you acted that way. And I'm like, man, you know, children are so gracious to forgive. They're like way, way ahead of most of us to forgive their parents. It's amazing. It's amazing. They're redundant. They can take a lot of wrong stuff and just a little bit of interaction with them, some apologies, some just acknowledging what was right and wrong. And they can process that, and they'll come back every time. They'll come back almost always to love you, forgive you, to make that right. That's their nature. That's actually deep in them. Isn't that cool? So you don't have to be untruthful to get that. You have to be real, truthful, let it be. Don't put on pretenses, and let them have their own faith. Let them have their own story. You just tell yours. Let's pray. Father, in Jesus' name, just thank you for this. We want to just, as we continue to look at this armor, I ask that we can practically put this on this week, to put on truth, to gird our loins with truth, to wear truth, to take it up and wear it. I want to walk in truth, whatever that is. That's scary sometimes, but I cast off pretense. I cast off posing. I want to just be in the truth. If I'm weak in something, I can just acknowledge that. I'm not strong in that. I don't do well with that. I don't need to be somebody I'm not. Give us grace to put on Jesus. We keep trying to put on our own righteousness and do better and behave better. We actually need to get more intent about getting up in the morning and putting this on, but we really don't want to take it off at night, so we just want to put it on, period. Put on his righteousness. I'm righteous because I'm covered in the blood. I'm righteous because there's an indestructible seed inside of me that's Jesus, my faith. I want to put on Jesus. I want to put on Jesus. I want to stay connected. Father, give grace for us to walk in the Spirit, to stay connected to you and not disconnect. Not disconnect. To take you even through our struggles. How long can you walk this week without disconnecting from Jesus? How long can you walk today without disconnecting from Jesus? You don't have to disconnect from the Spirit. We do. That's when we sin. That's when we do badly. But we don't need to. We don't need to disconnect. So, Father, I ask for a greater grace today. I just long for every person to be able to plug in and experience the plug-in, the connection. And if we can't feel it, to at least make the declaration that it exists, that you will never leave us, never forsake us. The Song of Solomon talks about the left hand, his left arm, his left hand, and his right hand, his right arm. And the left arm of the Lord is more difficult to discern, but it's always there. It's more difficult to discern that, but that it is always there. The right arm is more distinguishable. The right hand is more discernible, but the left is less discernible, but always there, always holding us. So ask that, Holy Spirit, let us discern and know in our spirit that your left arm, your left hand comes around and holds us, felt or unfelt, that it is there. Establish your comfort in our lives. Establish strength. Establish strength. Jesus, Jesus, Jesus. Thank you, Lord. Father, in Jesus' name. Father, in Jesus' name.